Hey guys, listen up. If your idea of skincare is rinsing your face with whatever's left from your shampoo, it really is time to upgrade. I want to tell you about the new men's line from Arrow Acres. It's made for guys who want real results without all the extra ingredients. Their products are clean, simple, and incredibly effective. From tallow balm that actually heals dry skin to hand-poured soaps that leave you smelling fresh and not floral. If you need a bug spray that works and doesn't leave you smelling like chemicals as well, they've got that. They've got lip balm and scrubs that are simple, no nonsense, and they're made with real ingredients that your skin actually wants. So if you're chopping wood, hitting the gym, or if you just want to stop stealing your wife's moisturizer and not telling anybody about it, well then they have your back. You can check out their full men's line by following the link in the show notes or on Instagram at Arrow Acres Homestead. Welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. This ministry exists to provide coaching, resources, and events for pastors and church members. My name is Jared Sparks. Join me as I talk pastoral ministry, applied theology like manhood and womanhood, political theology, and cultural analysis with a little bit of hunting and fishing thrown in. I'm a husband, a father, and a pastor, and I'm here to remind you of the chief pastor and our King, Jesus. Hello and welcome back to the show. Hope you guys are having a good day as always. I think that's my introductory line on every episode. I hope you're having a good day, but I really do hope it's going well for you. Looking forward to this conversation today. I do want to remind you of Arrow Acres. If you want to get some product for, you know, like lotion that's not girly, but is clean, Arrow Acres does a really great job. Some girls from our church, go ahead and check that out. That ad runs at the beginning of each episode for, I think, maybe one more month, but the girls are doing a really good job with that. Please check that out. Buy some stuff if you'd like. I'm trying to think. Other podcasts, go check out our other podcasts that we have going on. And other than that, I think that's it. So why don't we go ahead and introduce my guest for the day. I'm looking forward to talking to Ben Cumberland. Ben, how's it going, man?
That's going fantastic, Jared. You?
Good. Well, let's pray, and then we'll get to know you a little bit. Good. Father, just thank you for this time. I ask for blessing upon this conversation. Thank you for Ben. Really looking forward to talking to him. He's got a lot of interesting things going on, and I know he loves you, loves his family, and just some really cool work that he does as well. And then just for the fun, the stuff that he does, it's just really cool. Looking forward to it. So lead this time. I trust you will. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen.
All right, Ben. So the reason I'm having you on is because I saw your Instagram stuff about your timber sports and being sponsored by Still. And I thought, man, this guy's got to be a pretty cool dude. So reached out to you and here we are talking. So why don't we just get to know each other a little bit? Tell me about yourself and then your family and then what you got going on. What do you do?
Yeah. So I'm Ben Cumberland, obviously. I live in a small province in Atlantic Canada, which is part of the reason why our scheduling has been kind of wonky, because a little bit of a time difference. I'm married to Stephanie. We just had our third child, Winifred, and got another girl and a boy. And yeah, I get to swing axes as a sport, believe it or not. But yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, I've been a fan of your show for a while. So when you reached out and said, hey, I think it'd be cool to chat, I'm kind of, you know, a little bit in a starstruck, but.
Well, it's cool to have you on, man.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So what do you do for work? Because I know you do some, like, your actual work. Timber sports is not your main thing, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It's kind of crazy to think that I'm able to compete in timber sports as a sport, because my, you know, my day-to-day job is as a forest ranger for the province of New Brunswick. And so, you know, it's easiest to describe when you just kind of boil it down to three basic things, and that's forestry, wildfire, and wildlife. So we do a lot of different stuff as far as forestry management, whether that's doing sample plots or just measuring just different parts of the trees. And then the other side of the forestry management is the wildfire stuff. So it's been a pretty crazy year here in Atlantic Canada for fires. The word unprecedented has been tossed around a lot.
Okay.
And
is the government doing it to you?
Well, yeah, that's debatable, but a lot of the fires have kind of been more or less civilian lit, like a lot of areas where you know, it just wouldn't make sense. We had a few lightning strike fires that got started, but for the most part, we're pretty sure it was civilian lit.
Okay, gotcha. So the firefighting side, it's kind of interesting that you're in forestry doing that as well, because I would think that would generally be different teams, but you were out fighting a fire last week, I think, or 2 weeks ago when we were supposed to record. Is that typical? Is there like during the fire season, they send you out on the job like that?
Yeah, generally speaking, here in Canada, it's a little bit different from what it would be for you guys down in the States. The Forest Services, I believe, in the States, just attack fire a little bit more, I want to say militaristically, but basically we're just, it's a facet of our job up here. So, you know, one day we could be out, you know, dragging a bunch of roadkill off the road. And then, you know, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we get a call and someone spotted a smoke. So we have to roll the tanker and pump kit and a bunch of different stuff. And okay. We are very fortunate that we have a lot of volunteer fire departments who are pretty keen and gung-ho and are able to actually, you know, initial attack a lot of stuff. But this year, things have been pretty spicy as far as weather conditions and we call them fire weather indices, but basically it's just how ready is stuff able to burn and how quickly are things going to burn and how quickly is a forest fire going to take off. So we've had some pretty hairy situations, a couple of doozies as far as size goes, but we've been able to tackle things and keep it on the moderate down low.
Okay. Now, does the province or at the federal level, are there smoke jumpers like there are here in the States, or is that not a thing up there?
It's not as much of a thing here in Atlantic Canada. Earlier in the year, I think it was mid-late August when we first kind of started chatting, we had been brought in when things were really, really dicey, more or less. And there was a lot of big fires going on in the northeast part of the province. And okay. They had brought in some helicopters. And I was part of the first kind of initial attack team since early 2000s. And I was a sawyer on that crew. And mildly underutilized. We didn't really have as much of the gear or the size of the gear that we kind of needed. So, you know, being one of the worst seasons in quite a while, fire seasons, you know, a lot of people were learning and there was a lot of growing pains, but it was a really good experience. But as far as it goes in comparison to what you guys would have down the States, not nearly the capacity or the aggression, I would say. I've been on a couple fire training courses and been able to speak with some of my peers that would fight fires in the States, and it's a lot more aggressive mentality.
Gotcha. So let's talk gear for a second. What kind of boots are you wearing when you're out there?
So as a sawyer, generally speaking, just wearing anything that's CSA chainsaw certified. So whether that's Husqvarna or steel. And then if I'm not running a saw, it's just, you know, standard work boot, more or less, just any composite or steel toe. It doesn't get quite as fancy as far as gear goes up here, at least on the PPE stuff. You know, we're slowly being brought into the 21st century. A lot of people in our provincial fire center are really keen to make sure that New Brunswick's on the cutting edge of stuff. So we've been getting a lot of fresh gear. A lot of people that are really keen to get, you know, New Brunswick on the leading edge of actually being able to fight fires as aggressively as we can.
Gotcha. So I was thinking you might be wearing the White's boots or Nick's boots or something like that. One of those that are like $800. The heel stack.
I wish. Oh, yeah, the logger heel on the boot. That'd be phenomenal. I do have a coworker from the Miramichi area, and he was out on some fires, and he's got the 12-inch lace-up stat logger heel on him.
Nice.
And they're phenomenal boots. Like anything I've heard or talked to, you know, we even had some guys from Maine. I got to work with some of the crews from Maine, and a couple of guys there had the Whites, and it's like they're, you know, talking about how phenomenal of a boot they are. And we're kind of like, yep, right on. Okay, well, we're going to start stashing some money away so we can all hopefully get some boots ourselves.
Nice. Well, apparently they take forever to wear in because the leather on them is so thick. And then once you get them wore in, apparently they're awesome. If I don't really have a need for $800 boots, but there's something in me that wants them somehow, but I mean, I would never have a use for them.
The Origin boots would be pretty sweet. I actually have a pair of the Origin work boots for like my day-to-day range of work stuff. Phenomenal boots.
Yeah, I love those. I got a pair of Origin. Actually, I'm looking at them right now. They're the Buffalo leather
Nice.
ones. I like them. I've got a pair of Red Wings, but then for those that are watching, you can see here, I like the buffalo leather, darker leather. I really like Origin a lot. They've got some cool gear. In fact, I'm
I
supposed to
agree.
be talking to somebody from their dentist who works there. Supposed to be jumping on the show at some point, but
Nice.
that's up in your area. I mean, that's in Maine. That can't be too. How far are you from? Because you're in the northeast. One of the northeast provinces up there. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm about, I think I'm about 3 or 4 hours from Farmington, where Origin started.
Okay.
I think might be on the, like, the 5 hour end of things,
Okay.
just as far as like getting across the border and drive down the 95.
Cool. Very cool. When you come in, do you have to have a passport when you come into the States?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's funny because the last few years, things have kind of just ebbed and flowed, like since 2020 and COVID. And then, you know, it also just depends on who you get, like who you get at the, on the border and how things might be going
Okay.
on that day.
Gotcha. Okay. So what kind of saw are you cutting with when you're out there? Because is it big timber out there? Or I know it's not like West Coast timber, but I'm assuming you're cutting with some pretty mean saws when you're out in the field. Oh, I think I lost you. You there? Oh, are you back? There we go. All right.
Yep.
Okay, good deal. So what saws are you cutting with when you're out there, when you're cutting, and what kind of timber are you taking down when you're, because I think the East Coast to West Coast is not as big on the East Coast from what I hear, but what are you cutting with?
My favorite saw to run is either the Steel MS-261 or the Husqvarna 550 XP. Basically, just because they tend to be like your best power to weight ratio, as far as, you know, you're not lugging a massive saw. And if you were getting into bigger timber on the West Coast, you would want a bigger saw, but for the most part, you can put a longer bar on. But like you said, the timber size from East Coast to West Coast is a pretty decent disparity. So we're not cutting a lot of really big stuff unless it's a leftover white pine from clear cut or something like that, because more or less your stuff is generally in like the 24 inch diameter maximum.
Okay.
Unless you get a really nice stain of wood. But my dad's been a chainsaw safety instructor and felling instructor for as long as I've been alive, and he's actually starting to bring me on to help him with teaching and stuff. So learning a few more tips and tricks, and I can get around relatively easily with the 16, 18 inch bar on most stuff we encounter here in the province.
Nice. Very cool. I've always wanted the entry level commercial saws, like the 261, I think. And I cut with a 290, an old 290. And then I've got a couple Echo saws as well. But some point I'm going to get, because it's smaller timber here. Also, I'd like to get the, I think, is it a 251 or the 261? The still, that's kind of like the, you can run an 18 to 22 or 20, 18 to 20 inch bar, I think is what you can, probably down 16 to 20, something like that. But I think that's that low end commercial grade when you step from residential into commercial.
Yeah, that's probably, I want to get a more rugged saw or something that's, you know, going to last a bit longer.
Hey, I'm going to have to edit
they'll
this
generally
out.
Run into the 261. And
This will be seamless. I'll have to edit this out. I don't know why I'm having connection problems here, but start again after I said the 251 or the 261. Start again there, and then I'll make sure and edit this all, and it'll be seamless.
Yeah, no worries. Generally speaking, the 261 is kind of your where you're looking to go as far as moving from, like, you know, we call them like the weekend warrior saw, basically. But a lot of the guys I work with and a lot of the people we run into that kind of run stuff pretty consistently, they say like the 261 is your like pro level saw, which has got a little bit better metal alloys. You know, things are a bit more finely tuned and they just tend to last a little bit longer, and your chainsaw shops tend to have a bit more parts on hand as well.
Okay.
So they definitely can run like an 18, 20 inch bar. No real issues.
Cool. Yeah. I'll eventually pick that up at some point, but right now I'm working my way around with these three, and I've got at any given time, one of them down. So I've got two going, one down, and it's just kind of how it's been. Cause they're all older saws. So at some point I'll get fed up with the three of them and sell them all and go out and actually get one good saw. So let's back up a little bit. You're a Christian. You love your family. You're wanting to see, you know, the work of God in your generations, all that good stuff. Where'd that come from? You grew up in a Christian home. How'd you become a Christian?
Yeah, very, very blessed to be where I'm at in life, with wife and the family and, you know, location where we're at. I grew up in a Christian home. My parents got saved when they were at university, and they got saved through the Navigators program. And so, you know, missions and outreach and evangelism. Like that was a huge, huge part. I was born into one church. That church kind of had a little bit of a split, and dad and kind of the guys that were on that one elder's side of things started another church, grew up there. Then kind of just through basically dad says he's both blessed and cursed with the gift of discernment.
Okay.
And he's kind of been on the tip of the spear as far as pointing out where some things may be going in error from like from what scripture says. And we kind of jumped around churches a little bit before we landed at a Keswick United Baptist Church in Keswick Ridge. And that's where I spent the most of my, like most of my formative years from like 10 till it was about, well, till I graduated out of high school. And so the pastor that I spent most of the time sitting under, he was very John MacArthur-esque. Like he was a huge fan of John MacArthur's ministry. And that's where we first really experienced like expositional preaching and got exposed to guys like John Piper and Bodie Bauckham and, you know, Kevin DeYoung, guys like that. And so that's where I spent like the majority of my formative years. And then graduated high school and spent 4 years just working different jobs. I was 90% through the RCMP application process and got pretty rattled in the polygraph or the lie detector test, basically just because I was young and I knew it wasn't lying on something. And the guy just kept pushing the issue. And anyway, it got me pretty wound up. So they deferred me for a year.
Okay.
And I just started working other jobs. I worked in an electric motor repair shop and did a bunch of different things, worked in retail, a couple clothing stores, and basically just realized that if I wanted to do something aside from like, I enjoy working with my hands, but I wanted to be able to do a little bit more than that. And so I said, well, I'm going to go to school. So I chose to go to Maritime College of Forest Technology, shocked the pants off my family when they realized that I was going to go attend the college that my dad had just recently transferred to. So I did two years of forestry diploma, my advanced wildlife diploma as well. That was also kind of when I stepped away from my faith a little bit and just sort of backslid some. Dated a girl I definitely shouldn't have been and made some pretty bad decisions. And then one Sunday in the spring of my first year, a girl stood up at our church in Keswick United and she was just saying like, you know, I've been convicted about the different things that I've been doing in my life. And her testimony also convicted me as well. And so at that time I'm like, well, I just gotta like, have to end things here and move on. And I always knew growing up that I wanted to be a dad. Like I didn't really know what I wanted to do in life for a job, but I knew I wanted to be a dad because I had a really great dad. And I, you know, I always just like, I almost wanted to get married and have kids and things like that. And then after things ended with this relationship and it was like rough and on the rocks. And I was just like, that's enough. I'm done. I just got to realize that God has called me to be a follower of him first before anything else. Mm. And so I just put everything else aside and just through school and focusing on my relationship with him, trying to do everything I could on, as far as I could on my end. And he brought Stephanie along into my life. And through a very, interesting set of events, ended up proposing a couple years after we started chatting and then got married 4 months after we were engaged. And now here we are. It's been, well, we got married in 2019. So we just had our sixth wedding anniversary and we've got three kids.
Awesome.
Lord willing, we'll have more.
Amen. Praise God. Man, that's great stuff. That's very cool. So in all of this, somehow or another, you got into timber sports. So with all that good stuff happening, how did you get into, because I grew up watching on ESPN timber sports and was around, you know, just cutting and firewood and that kind of thing. And loved watching. I don't even remember the names of the events, but they would take the axe, they'd cut in, they'd put the plank, they'd climb the totem pole.
Springboard.
The springboard. And then at the top, they would go through and chop all the way through the top. And then, you know, with the big power saws, you know, you're making your three cuts and all that was fun to watch. And then it disappeared from ESPN. I don't know why. It was like Strongman and Timber Sports were on. And then maybe it was ESPN too. Or maybe it was just my parents stopped paying for cable and that's what it was. It's been away. But how did you get into that? And then, man, you're sponsored. You're wearing a Still shirt. You're sponsored by Still, which is the top of the top in timber sports. So, man, let's talk about that process for a little bit. And how did you get where you are today with that?
Yeah, so it's you could say it's kind of in my blood. I've got great-great-grandparents on my dad's side, on my dad's mother's side, who actually like were log drivers on the rivers in New Brunswick. And so that's where timber sports, like lumberjack competitions, timber sports, where that's where that all started here in North America, was just competitions between lumber camps. Mm-hmm. Guys like, you know, I can throw that axe more accurate than you, or I can saw through this log or chop faster than you can. So that's just, you know, dudes being dudes, that's just where the competition side of things started. Uh-huh. Wood chopping in New Zealand, Australia actually started in like the 1800s, like competitive wood chopping down there.
Okay.
But they're, you know, they're another level. And so that process of me becoming like just getting into timber sports, it's all through my dad. You know, he started at the University of New Brunswick. He competed on the Wisdom team there. And then he married mom, and then they started having kids, and they brought us to the competitions. And dad was actually, as far as he knows, he was the first competitor to just come right out of college and win his first pro show. Like he won the overall at his first pro show. And so he was just like, you know, God's really blessing me. And he has seen the impact of God's blessing in that sport for the last 40 years. Like this year, 2025 is Steel Timber Sports like 40th anniversary. And okay. It's pretty neat because, you know, dad's celebrating his 60th birthday, and he actually qualified for Timber Sports Nationals here in Canada in the 40th anniversary of Steel Timber Sports. So
good for him.
He's pretty amped up when after the qualifier, and then he saw the list and he's like, oh, awesome. And then we're like, dad, are you actually going? He said, no, I'm going to go, and I'm going to be the commentator, like the analyst, and sit behind a microphone and talk while you guys compete. So we grew up with it, and he never pushed us. He never, you know, some parents are like, I love this thing, and I just like, I want my kids to love it too.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in some ways trying to right the wrongs of his father and striving to be, you know, as godly of a father as he could. So he never pushed us. Like I played hockey and baseball growing up, and, you know, dad at about, when I was about 6 years old, dad sold all his gear. He sold everything because dad's an all or nothing kind of person. And he basically retired more or less. And then he just spent a lot more time focusing on raising myself and my other three siblings. And then right around, you know, 10, 12 years old, after we kind of grew out of, you know, the fun side of organized team sports, mm-hmm. when things started getting political, and, you know, they're doing drafts in hockey, and you got to pay an arm and a leg. Like, that was the other thing. You know, we were, dad was the only one that worked. You know, mom was a stay-at-home mom and homeschooled myself and my siblings. So money was a little tighter than a lot of other families. So, you know, the last year I played hockey, like I was the only one going to the rink. You know, my family would show up and they'd just cheer me on, but there was no reason for them to be there aside from the fact that I was there and mm-hmm. we only had one vehicle. So we hung up the skates and put the ball mitts away. And at that point, Nathan and I kind of took a shine. We probably watched a lot of the same ESPN videos because mm-hmm. dad had all the old VHS tapes of like Mel Lance and Mark Etchberry and, you know, Rollin Esslinger and guys like that, Jason Lentz Jason Wynyard and a bunch of the guys from Down Under. And anyway, so Nathan and I don't know how many light bulbs we smashed out of our living room chandelier because we'd have an axe handle and we'd be pretending to chop already uh-huh. with videos. And yeah, so we just started saying, hey, dad, you know, I think we could, you know, like chop a bit. And he's like, yeah, sure, absolutely. He's like, here we go again. And yeah, we just developed a natural love for it. And it was right around like the age of 16 for both Nathan and I, where we kind of like a switch kind of flipped and we were able to chop decently well. Like we both kind of beat around the bush a little bit. And, you know, there was we actually lived half like an acre over from the local United Church. And Nathan and I took a couple axes out back and we're just like, oh, that tree looks like it could get cut anyway. So we knocked that tree down and walk up and chop it. And then Oh, that one couldn't hear me. Not anyway. Dad took a walk out back. He went, "Oh my goodness, boys, you have basically clear cut the church's property that we're going over to talk to the deacons." So he marched us into the church office, and he talked to the deacon before. He's like, "I need you to like really give it to the boys. Like, you know, I need you to be hard on them." And the deacon walked in, and he saw Nathan and I stand there like terrified. And he looked at it, he said, I can't do it, man. He's like, "You know, as long as you boys like clean up your mess, and we'll call it good." Nathan and I kind of looked at each other, like, "Oh man, we got off really easy on this one."
Right.
Because there were a lot of trees down.
Okay, so, gotcha.
So yeah, so just developed a love for it naturally, and basically just progressed slowly through things. I used to be about 165, 175 pounds.
Okay.
Before I went to college, and then I went to college, and 2 years of inactivity and cafeteria food put me up to like 220. So
man,
I hit the gym pretty decently, but basically just shot my metabolism in the foot with the cafeteria food, and then learned how to lift heavy so that it looked like I was like I did something basically. Okay. But no, I actually, jokes aside, I actually still love lifting heavy and getting in the gym and just gripping a barbell. But we started traveling around to some shows and competing with some guys, and you know, you learn in sports in general, but like also in life as a sphere, you learn a lot more when you fail. And you know, we got our butts handed to us at a bunch of competitions, and we talked to people, and we were like fanatical, almost like watching videos all the time, watching the guys who were winning the events and learning their technique.
Right.
And learning how they like presented the axe into the block, or how they ran the cross cut, or you know, picked up the hot saw and different things like that. So it was about 2012, 2013. Nathan and I were, you know, we were right around 18, 20 years old, and Nathan won the first Canadian rookie championship, and he went over as part of Team Canada. And then that basically just started things rolling, and he won a couple, 3 years in a row. And then I won in 2015. I won the national championship, which is kind of funny because most people just assume Nathan's the oldest. He's not. He's just the biggest. He's like 6'4", 300 plus pounds. Like the dude's a monster. And so 2015, won the Canadian Nationals, was a member of Team Canada in Poland in 2015, the fall of 2015. 2016, I went over to Austria for the Rookie World Championships. Very blessed and was able to win that, and then jumped into the pro division, and it's been a wild ride ever since. So next year will be my 10th year in the pro division, and it's just crazy to think that I've been so blessed at this sport, because it's something like I just grew up watching in the living room, and I've been able to meet a lot of those guys that I actually watched and compete alongside them. So, you know, it's very much a, you know, pinch me is this real sort of moment every now and then, especially at like the world championship stage. So
super. So, so then how did the sponsorship start? And I'm wondering, there's got to be some money in it, but most of you guys can't do this full time. I'm assuming this isn't like a full time gig, or are there some guys that are able to make it full time? Does there sponsors that go in? How did Still get involved? Or I guess, how did you get involved with Still? How does all that stuff work?
Yeah. So as far as I know, there's only like maybe two or three guys that do a competitive timber sports as a job in the world. And a lot of other guys, you know, it's a side gig, or they've got some pretty decent sponsorships. I'm pretty sure there's at least one or two athletes that have had like, you know, $90,000 plus sponsorships from companies. For us, it's always kind of been out of pocket. We've had a little bit of sponsorship along the way. You know, some people that have been kind enough to, you know, tune up hot saws, and other companies that have like gifted us other saws that we can modify, and a little bit here and there. But Steel has run, like I said, this is the 40th anniversary for Timber Sports. And so technically I am not sponsored by Steel, but okay, I have a lot of Steel gear. Oddly enough, I don't actually own a Steel chainsaw. I own two Husqvarnas.
Okay.
And people ask me, why is that? And I said, because I made a very silly mistake when I actually won a Steel chainsaw, and I sold it so that I could have money to go to school. And then I've won overall at a couple competitions that had Husqvarna chainsaws as the overall award.
Okay.
So that's the only reason I have Husqvarnas over steel. But I compete along with, you know, a lot of other steel quote unquote athletes.
Mm.
But basically, you know, there's just a lot of different aspects at the professional level. You know, a lot of people are able to get some pretty significant sponsorships. And for me, it's basically just been, you know, steel is kind of the largest player in the game as far as World Series. So there's a lot of other big competitions. So down under, you know, in Australia, New Zealand, mostly Australia, like there's the Sydney Royal Easter Show, and that's 7 to 10 days of just pure wood chopping. They've got some single bucking and two man cross cutting as well. But you know, that's arguably the biggest wood chopping competition in the world. And then there's the Lumberjack World Championships in Hayward, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And they're arguably one of the biggest ones in North America. There's also Squamish, British Columbia in Canada. That's another huge one. And it's been going for like 50 plus years. And so as far as like competing with steel or being sponsored by steel, I've been very, very blessed to be able to reach a very high level with Steel Timber Sports. And I've been able to, you know, travel the world and just be a part of Team Canada and represent our country on the national stage in a couple of years. And just one thing that we've always talked about as a family is that we love how Timber Sports is family friendly.
Okay.
And we love that it gives us an opportunity to share faith with people, because there have been, I made a joke one day to someone at a church. I said, I'm not a very good Sabbatarian, because I was away on Sunday for a competition.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways that we've tried to make up for that is being able to share our faith with people that we compete with, or people that we just encounter. And I've been incredibly blessed to be able to meet some fantastic people from across the globe and be a part of this Timber Sports family that really is kind of like a family. Like you show up to the show, like my brother's a member of Team Canada this year, headed to Milan, Italy. And they asked me to chop the standing block for them this year. And I said, well, my third child is going to be arriving early October, and I think I'm going to be deciding to stay home and help my wife as we adjust with this third. She was also giving me the two thumbs up for that one.
Yeah. Great decision.
But like you said, there's a little bit of prize money. It's been very providential in last few years, because my wife and I, we bought some land, and some of the prize money that I've actually been fortunate enough to make has helped us, you know, pay off some bills and cover some debts. So
cool.
Very thankful for that.
Yeah, man. Well, it's such a unique thing, because Timber Sports, for those that don't know, you should definitely go up and look up Timber Sports, but even follow Ben. I'll put some links in the show notes and everything, so you can find some of what he does and competitions and stuff, because I did find some YouTube videos, and it's really cool to see what you guys are doing. As far as the events, what is your kind of go-to event? What's the most fun for you? Is it straight chopping? Is it cutting with the saw? What's your favorite event that you do?
Oh, man. It's one of those like addicting feelings, you know, when you get that, because you're a bow hunter. So you know that feeling when you get like that perfectly placed arrow on an animal and you just like nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, I gotta go back for more. Like that's just, you know, the adrenaline and the, just the almost surreal feeling of things going well. It's similar to that using a razor sharp axe, like, cause the axes are sharp enough to shave with, as you probably can tell. And that's one of the most addicting parts of the sport.
Okay.
There's always little things that can go wrong, but chopping is just one of those things. And I love the chopping. Like I just love getting to swing an axe with a really nice piece of wood. And however, one of the event that God has really blessed me the most in is the single buck and like the one man cross cut. And mm-hmm. we have a phenomenal single buck. It's actually getting moderately old compared to a lot of other saws. It's 11 years old this mm-hmm. year. JP Mercier in Quebec filed it for my brother and I. And I actually am fortunate enough to hold the world record in that event without assistance. So without wedge and spray. So that's the one that everyone's like, oh, it's gotta be your favorite, right? I'm like, well, you know, like yes, God has really blessed me in this one. However, I would much rather swing an axe.
Yeah, man, that's
Because,
so cool. So
yeah,
cool.
it's one of those things, you know, people, I always viewed myself as like someone who's trying to learn and trying to, you know, try and pick up tips from people here and there and how to get better. And now I'm at the point where, you know, people are asking me like, how can I cut? Like, what am I doing wrong here? And
okay.
I'm just like floored at different competitions when people are like, hey, how can I, like, if, can you watch me chop? And can you tell me what I'm doing? And I'm like, yeah, no, I can, and I'll try my best. And then people are like, man, you just like, it's like, how'd you get so good? And I'm like, well, I mean, aside from the fact that God's really blessed me at this, the thing that a lot of people don't realize is that I've been swinging an axe since I could walk.
Yeah, since you're a kid.
Pretty much. So there's a lot of exposure and, you know, I don't know how many hours just watching stuff. And
yeah,
I've always been a very visual learner. I've been able to like sit there and watch someone do something. And then I'm like, okay. And I go attempt it. And then dad's actually always chuckled because I could learn by reading decently as well. And so we had a milk cow for, about a decade growing up. And
okay.
He was trying to milk her one day and she kept kicking the milk bucket over. And he said, man, I don't understand what's going on. And he could see me standing back there. I was just doing the barn chores and I was watching him. And he said, what's going on? And I said, why don't you try like leaning your head into her side while you're trying to milk her? He said, what? No way. Anyway, he tried it. And she's just stood still. He said, where'd you learn that? I said, oh, I read it in a book. And been a pretty voracious, well, I was a voracious reader. I stopped through high school and college, and then I've been picking it up a lot lately. So, but yeah, it's to be able to compete with the people that I compete with, to go the places I've been able to go, and just, you know, like the fact that I'm getting to chat with you because of timber sports, it's pretty amazing to me.
Well, it's cool for this side too, just hearing what you do. For guys like yourself, do you guys like Buck and Billy Ray at all? I've wanted to one of his axes. I know it's a totally different thing cutting for firewood, but man, it's fun to see what he does and his joy in that. And I think a lot of guys get brought into the axe world or just that kind of world through videos or YouTube channels like that. But so for you guys, you like Billy Buck and Billy?
I really enjoy his videos. He's actually talked a lot back and forth with my dad. Yeah. So dad's a YouTuber now, something that was not on my bingo card for my life ever. He obviously has, Buck and Billy has a lot of YouTube followers, and he's always talking about axes and, you know, axe handles and stuff. Well, dad has been making axe handles, like custom racing axe handles and just anything in general since he was, well, since the late 80s, early 90s. And so dad was thinking, how am I going to grow my business? How am I going to grow my YouTube channel? I'm going to send Buck and Billy some axe handles. And so he got in touch with Billy and he sent him some axe handles, and they just kind of struck up a friendship and got chatting back and forth a little bit. And so Buck and Billy has a bunch of dad's axe handles.
No way. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So dad, he actually keeps track of where in the world he sent his axe handles on a map in his, the shop out in his garage. For the longest time, he just made everything in the basement of the house. And now he's put an addition on the garage. That's where he does a decent amount of his YouTube videos. East Coast Lumberjack is his business name.
I was going to ask.
Yep. And so he's got a map on the wall, and he's just got pins and stickers for everywhere that he sent an axe. And it's very common for people overseas, like at the world championships, they're like, is your dad still selling axe handles? We're like, yep. What do you need? And so we can.
Super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to, I'll put a link to that too. I'm going to get off of here and subscribe to his channel immediately. So East Coast, I'm going to write it down here.
Yeah, East Coast Lumberjack.
Oh man, so cool. So how long has he been doing that? Well, the YouTube channel anyways?
The YouTube channel really only took off in the last couple of years.
Okay.
A bunch of different things kind of occurred at the Ranger School or the Maritime College of Forest Technology. And he was let go from there. And a bunch of different stuff. And that's kind of when he's like really dedicated his time to the business. And that's kind of the main reason that the YouTube stuff took off. But he's always had a side business. And he also worked for the provincial government growing up. He was the provincial deer biologist. So
okay.
The mount behind your head. I noticed it every episode because like deer was one of the things that, aside from timber sports and deer, that was the deal growing up. So,
Yeah, it's it was a small one. That was my first one. So I went ahead and got it mounted since it was my first one. But, well, super cool, man. Well, it sounds like a good dude. To hear you talk about your dad is exactly what I hope for with my sons, is that they grow up and speak well. And, you know, I think we all have lessons, positive and negative, that we take away from our parents. But to hear that your dad, you got a good one, and that it's just pretty cool. It's cool that he's still after it, too. I mean, it doesn't sound like he's slowing down.
No, he's trained pretty hard the last few years, especially like in timber sports, to get back to nationals. And the big thing for him was he wanted to qualify for nationals in the 40th year of timber sports and on his 60th turn around the planet. So he's pretty amped about that. We're pretty amped for him too. So
Very good. Well, man, this has been a lot of fun. It's been cool getting to know you a little bit and for everybody to be able to listen into this conversation. So they're interested in more and want to find some more content. Where can they go to see what you're doing or about the timber sports or anything? Send them somewhere.
Well, I mean, you know, there's not really any spot that I'm curating content. You know, I usually download Instagram here and there to keep up with the steel timber sports stuff. So I'm on Instagram. Dad's YouTube channel is East Coast Lumberjack, and he's also got a website there. And I'm just, you know, it's one of those things that I never thought I'd ever have to direct people to. And so I'm getting up to a whole bunch of reformed theology shenanigans over on X, and just finding my way and learning how to follow God and just thank him for his grace every day.
Amen. Well, keep at that. And, you know, it's going to be cool to see and just follow what you're doing. And it's just neat to see the success that God has given you. And it's cool to see you doing that for the good and right reasons. And it'll be cool. I don't know if you're planning on doing the same things with your kids, if you're going to let them kind of organically or naturally get into that, but maybe you can save them from cutting down a forest behind a church building one day. So
Leo, my firstborn, he just loves it. Anything that he puts his hands to becomes an axe or a saw, and he just starts whacking away.
Super fun. Super fun. Well, Ben, it's been a lot of fun having this conversation. Appreciate your time. And I just thanks so much for coming on the show. Guys, we've been talking to Ben Cumberland. Ben, appreciate it, man.
My pleasure. Thank you.